Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, July 30th. I'm Lisa Music, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Soups consider independent oversight of policing. Open recruitment call for the DCC's Cannabis Advisory Committee, and loved ones seek answers on missing loved ones in Southern Humboldt and Northern Mendocino. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County's grand jury is recommending civilian oversight of the Sheriff's Office, and the Board of Supervisors has begun discussions on it. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County might follow the City of Eureka's lead and form a committee or other means of independent oversight of the Sheriff's Office. Civilian oversight boards review policing in some counties and cities, including Eureka, and Humboldt's Board of Supervisors discussed the prospect at its July 23rd meeting. On the agenda was the board's response to a recent grand jury report titled, "Humboldt County Sheriff's Office: Is a Lack of Oversight Due to a Lack of Foresight?" The grand jury found that the county's lack of independent policing oversight can lead to public mistrust and lack of mutual understanding between law enforcement and the community. The report also says that the county lacks means of independent review of specific incidents. Supervisor Natalie Arroyo is a former Eureka council member and noted the city's formation of its Community Oversight of Police Practices, or COPS, board. Arroyo said there's more to oversight than people might think.
Having been through that whole thing, I can say the value of it is not just accountability or oversight or this idea that they're watching to see where there are mistakes being made, but rather the communication, the value of having that increase in public trust in the community. And those factors are very valuable. And I think people have only talked to me about this from both perspectives with the idea that this could be a body that would be a watchdog. I've heard the term watchdog as the primary one where people are saying that we don't need a watchdog. There's already enough mechanisms for oversight and accountability, or we really need a watchdog and this is why this should be implemented. And I want to just say that there's this other really important piece of it that is about communication and understanding and getting people interested in law enforcement even.
The grand jury recommends formation of an oversight committee or an inspector general's office to review policing. County staff presented supervisors with two options to respond: to hold off on carrying out the recommendation because of a $15 million budget shortfall, or to give it analysis, including an appointed working group. Board Chair Rex Bone said the sheriff's office seems to have community support, and noting the absence of sheriff's representatives due to incident response, vouched for postponing further discussion.
I do have a problem. I think how ironic this is that the sheriff's rating is about 25% better than the Board of Supervisors, but we're talking about putting an oversight committee on him. I mean, we probably should have an oversight committee on us, maybe. But I would just as soon bring this back and have a decision made with the party that it affects. I think they do a pretty good job of getting the word out there and what we've done with them. So, and I think they get out in the community. You see them at a lot of events and trying to be as many things as he can.
During public comment, grand jury foreman Richard Bergstresser, a retired police officer, said an oversight board can do what the grand jury and other review groups can't.
The grand jury is not the appropriate oversight for the sheriff's department. It is a systemic overview and review. It is not a case-by-case review. That would be out of jurisdiction of the grand jury and inappropriate for the local for the current discussion. We'll understand about the money. This is a relatively inexpensive idea. I don't mean to take away from the time, staff time that would be involved. This is likely easily covered by grant money. There are lots of grants out there for law enforcement. But I'd also like to make clear that this is not like the Citizens Law Enforcement Liaison Committee, which really hasn't done much and had no teeth, but also came about pre the current scrutiny of law enforcement nationwide.
Supervisors unanimously voted to agree with the grand jury's findings and to do more research and analysis with the assistance of the working group. The discussion will resume in late August. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Metz.
The Hill Fire has burned over 7,000 acres in eastern Humboldt County and displaced residents nearest the fire. However, as containment increases, now standing at 69%, evacuation orders and warnings have been downgraded. KMUD News spoke with a representative on scene at the Hill Fire for the latest update.
So my name is Sean Morrissey. I am a public information officer with the California Incident Management Team 4. So today with the Hill Fire, as you guys have probably seen, there was a bit more containment again. They're up to almost 70%. Acreage has stayed the same. The fire stayed in the same exact footprint. Still looking at hot spots and mopping up and doing a lot of suppression repair, pulling out equipment, hoses, things like that. So really not much has changed other than the evacuation orders that have decreased. Some of them have gone from orders to warnings, and some of the other warnings have just completely been taken away. So mostly the warnings are the perimeter of the actual fire grounds themselves. It's on the east side. It is the 06 road. On the west is Route 1. That's kind of where the fire was sandwiched in between, and the fire footprint is kind of outlined between those two. Right now they're working on, you know, clearing things up, getting some of the heavy equipment things out of the way, but they still do have a lot of trucks and things going on.
Online fire resources are anticipating full containment of the Hill Fire by August 15th. Morrissey shared the demobilizing efforts as a fire reaches containment status.
So the process is usually just, as of right now, we still have about 900 people working on the fire, somewhere around there. It's gradually right-sizing every day to fit the needs of the fire and the companies and, you know, if other areas around, you know, California, around the country need resources. So slowly and slowly, you know, more and more will get mopped up and they'll put out, you know, whatever small little hotspots they might find. Mostly very well interior things along the fire perimeter. So it's just going to slowly, hopefully, downgrade and downgrade in size, and eventually just it'll be handed over to the Forest Service so they can kind of take the lead in finally shutting it down. I'm not sure if that date is always a hard date out. You know, things can change, so you don't want to, you know, count it exactly as August 15th, but if that's what they're hopefully predicting, then, you know, you want to see it complete in that time frame if you can.
Morrissey expressed gratitude for the diligence of firefighters to reach this level of containment in such a short period of time.
Just again, the firefighters and the crews out there and all the people working on this have worked very hard for the last couple of weeks. A lot of, with the climate and the temperature that's been, you know, typically seen in the area, it's not easy for fires to go out this fast. 2 weeks is a pretty quick turnaround because it was only 2 weeks yesterday for us to get to this point right here. You're going to see, you know, fires in other states and across the country that take much, much longer to get under control and containment. So just they've been doing a great job, and I think they deserve all the credit in the world.
For the latest evacuation information, visit protect.genesis.com. In two separate missing persons cases, Jamie Lynn Maroney of Southern Humboldt and Manuel Alvarado of Mexico have both been reported missing. Lauren Schmidt brings you the details.
Families are searching for answers about missing loved ones in both southern Humboldt and northern Mendocino County. Jamie Lynn Maroney was last seen 2 weeks ago at approximately 3 a.m. near Chris's Flower Shop in Redway, across the street from the CHP substation. She was reportedly on her way to a friend's house. Her partner says when he arrived to pick her up, she had never made it to the location. Her family and friends are asking for the public to be on the lookout for the 41-year-old female and to report any information to the local sheriff's office.
Yeah, my name is Kirk Thurston. I've been with Jamie for 7.5 years. She's been missing for 13 days now.
According to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office online tool, Crime Graphics, Maroney was officially reported to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office as a missing person on July 24th. She is described as a 41-year-old white female, approximately 5'6", weighing 160 pounds, with short brown hair and green eyes.
Beautiful. She's super friendly. She's got green eyes. She shaved her head and like 5 months ago, and she still doesn't take away from her beauty. She has a face that would leave an impression on anybody, you know. She was last seen leaving home, and she was going to go take a backpack. We were going to head north to go up to a friend's house, and then she went up to a friend's to take a shower and never made it there. When I came to pick her up, my friend's up to go up north, she didn't show up to take a shower, and she just wasn't there, which isn't completely out of the norm because she's a free spirit. She goes and does whatever she wants pretty much all the time, you know, and sometimes she'd be gone, like the most in the seven and a half years that I've been with her, she's never been gone for like more than 4 days without getting a hold of me or her parents, you know.
Thurston believes Maroney may have been experiencing a mental health crisis and is concerned that her record of homelessness might be impacting the way authorities are investigating her disappearance.
Law enforcement, it's kind of frustrating. And it's like same with like the whole mental health thing. Like there's no real help for people who truly could use it, you know? And yeah, the community, I feel like, you know, friends and family and friends is always going to be, I feel like, more of an impact. But we just don't have the necessary, like, means to be able to do what they can do, really, you know, in the sense of, like, canines. And, like, we should, like, there hasn't even been a search party as far as I know. And I myself have gone through as many camps as I can to put the information out there. I don't know what to do. I'm lost.
He stated that there may have been a possible sighting near the Benbow area last week.
It was the day before yesterday. Her sister got a call from a parks and recreational worker. He must have seen a flyer or a post on Facebook or something that he's seen her. He said about, you know, 5 to 7 days before the posters were put out, walking on the southbound bike lane. She was between like Benbow Inn and Benbow Exit, walking south. Like that's pretty much the last and only like lead that we have, that as far as I know. I just want to know that we all just want to know that she's okay. Like whatever she's doing, it's okay. Like we love you. We just want to know that she's okay. Like call home, call anybody, let us know. Come home. We're all just begging for her safety and her well-being. If there's anything that anybody knows, please let us know.
You can see a photo of Jamie Lynn Maroney on the KMUD News Facebook page. Any tips on her whereabouts can be reported to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-923-2761. Another family is also desperate for answers about their loved one, who was last heard from in Covelo in northern Mendocino County. Manuel G. Alvarado is believed to have gone missing on July 22nd near Mendocino Pass Road after sending a cryptic text message to his out-of-town relatives.
So my name is Jessica Espinosa. I am Manuel Alvarado's cousin, and It's been over a week since my cousin Manuel went missing near Covelo, California, in the Mendocino forest. And unfortunately, my aunt and my cousins, which are Manuel's brothers and sisters, they're in Mexico. And I'm in a different state, and we just feel so powerless. We've been trying to get somebody to go search for him and hopefully find him since Monday, but we just feel very powerless. We feel like the search hasn't really happened but one day, and we're just desperate. We don't know who else to reach out and what else to do to get some help and find him.
On July 22nd, Manuel contacted his family in distress.
So it was about 10:32 p.m. on Monday, July 22nd, and I had attempted to call him a few hours before or an hour before, and he didn't answer. But around 10:32 p.m., he sent me a text, and it said, "Cousin, help me, I'm here." So that's what it said, translating that in Spanish. So in Spanish, he said, "Prima, ayúdame, estoy aquí." And I called him right away. That's all I got from him. And fortunately, he picked up, but we were on the phone for about 1 minute and a few seconds. And he was just telling me to help him, that he was lost. And I was just asking him, like, I don't recollect the exact words, but because we didn't know, you know, where he was. My cousin had received a text message earlier that day where he was just saying goodbye. He was saying that he felt really sorry for not being able to help her, for not being able to help my cousin. He was apologizing to her for that. He was saying that he loved her, to say goodbye to her brothers, sisters, to tell them he loves them, and to look for his body in the mountains in Covelo, California. So when he called me, I didn't know what to think. So I just asked him how he was. I'm like, how are you? Where are you? He just kept telling me, I'm lost. And he told me, I'm going to send you my location. My phone's about to die. And he was just really worried about sending me the location. And then about like 10:32 in that same minute, I got it. And when I told him, I got it. He said, my phone's about to die. And then our call ended.
His location was reportedly within the Mendocino National Forest near Twin Rocks Creek.
So at 10:32, we ended our call, and I tried to reach a police department, sheriff department, and the local law enforcement. Since I live in a different state, I can't call 911 or it'll page me, you know, through the law enforcement in my county. So I looked up a number online, and then I called the sheriff's department there in Mendocino. Since it was after hours, dispatch called, and they started to ask me all these questions, to which I had no answers to. They wanted to know where he worked. They wanted to know where he lived. They wanted to know when was the last time I spoke with him. And honestly, I hadn't spoken to my cousin in years. So I had no answers to these questions other than his exact location. And I was just trying to get help for somebody to go and find him, because I had his location. And the way I felt is, if somebody goes over there right now, you will be able to find him now and get him some help.
She fears that her cousin may have been experiencing a mental health crisis.
It seems that way just based on the text message he sent to his mom earlier that day, because it concluded with, "Look for my body in the mountains in a town called Covelo, California." And our minds went there, but we don't know. I didn't ask him a million questions, you know, when I was on the phone with him. And it's just, I don't know. And I wish I knew. I feel it's one of the guilts I'm carrying right now, that maybe if I had talked to him, maybe, you know, if I called him, maybe if I had reached out to him sooner, we wouldn't be in this situation. But I don't know. The only thing I can do right now is pray he's okay and just help as much as I can.
Manuel had told a family friend that he was working on a farm in Covelo, but never specified which kind of farm or sent an address. When asked if he could have been working on an unlicensed farm or fallen victim to human trafficking, she said,
"My cousin was always in Mexico. He has degrees. He was well educated, and he always did the right thing and helped his family the right way. And I don't see why he would be involved in any of that.
She shared this message from Manuel.
We love you and we miss you. And we're very worried. We just want to know you're okay. So if you could just tell us if you're okay, we're always here for you. We can help you. Just please reach out to you. If anybody knows anything, if anybody has seen him, please, any information would help.
Manuel Alvarado is a 44-year-old Latino man, 5'8 to 5'10 in height, approximately 210 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes.
He has tattoos on his right arm. He has like a tribal style design with bold curving lines on the upper arm and detailed tattoo of trees with two wolves and birds flying above them on the forearm. On the left arm, he has a script tattoo featuring like cursive text along with additional tribal designs and like a circle area around his biceps.
Espinoza also shared this message in Spanish.
Manuel, si estás escuchando este mensaje, solo quiero que sepas que todos te extrañamos mucho, te queremos mucho y queremos saber noticias de ti, si estás bien. Si nos puedes contactar, hazlo, por favor, lo más rápido posible. Para todas las personas que nos están escuchando, les pido de favor, si llegan a ver a alguien hispano, como alrededor de 44 años, un poco alto, casi 6 pies, como 5'10", más o menos de 210 libras o menos, su cuerpo, sus brazos están tienen mucho músculo. Él tiene cabello negro, tiene ojos café y tiene tatuajes en los dos brazos. Tiene un tatuaje como de línea de letra cursiva en el brazo izquierdo, como en forma circular, y en el brazo derecho tiene letras igual en la parte de arriba, y en la parte de abajo tiene un tatuaje que es como un bosque, tiene dos lobos como con pájaros. Entonces, si les pido de favor, si lo llegan a ver en la calle o si lo llegan a identificar, que nos dejen saber, por favor. We are going to continue to reach out to whoever listens, as many news outlets, to the sheriff's department, to the county, to anybody who would listen, and hopefully somebody can actually go and search the area, and we won't give up. We won't give up. We will continue to search.
You can see a photo of the missing 44-year-old on the KMUD News Facebook page. Anyone with information is asked to call the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office at 707-463-4086. KMUD News will continue to share updates. In addition, if you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, please know there is help available. You can dial 988 24/7, 7 days a week for assistance.
California's Department of Cannabis Control is soliciting applicants during an open recruitment period for their Cannabis Advisory Committee, CAC.
The Cannabis Advisory Committee, or the CAC, is an advisory body. It's established in statute in the Business and Professions Code. And the CAC fosters robust public discussion to help inform policy updates that advance a safer, sustainable, equitable cannabis market. The CAC also provides the public with opportunities to play an active role in the conversation about state cannabis standards and regulations. CAC meetings are intended to be accessible by all, and so we hold them virtually over WebEx. Anyone can watch these meetings live, and anyone can offer input during our public comment periods. You can also send in written public comment prior to the meeting, and all of that information is contained in our meeting announcements, which can be found on our DCC website.
That was Jacqueline Campion, Deputy Director of the Policy and Research Division at the DCC. Currently, there are around 18 members of the CAC. However, most of those members will be completing their tenure on the CAC next month, prompting the open recruitment. CAC members come from all aspects of the cannabis community.
We have on our current membership licensees who run different types of cannabis businesses and help us understand how regulations are operationalized. We have academic researchers and scientific experts, representatives from public safety and local government organizations, as well as membership representing labor communities.
Campion stated that the DCC is seeking diverse candidates to fill the committee seats.
We are looking for cannabis advisory committee membership that reflects the diversity of California, as well as the diversity of the cannabis market and the communities that are impacted by cannabis activities. Some of the things that we're looking at include representatives from the cannabis industry, including medicinal cannabis, representation from labor organizations, state and local regulatory agencies, individuals who work directly with racially, ethnically, and economically diverse populations, public health experts, researchers, and other subject matter experts, including representatives from the Department of Alcohol and Beverage Control, with expertise in regulating commercial activity for adult use intoxicating substances.
The CAC advises the DCC on implementing regulations, including the recent implementation of Senator McGuire's SB 833 that allows for canopy and renewal date changes, as well as Assembly Bill 1885 that directs the DCC to create regulations for the medicinal use of cannabis products for pets. The CAC has a hand in the creation of Appalachian regulations also, a point of interest for many in the Emerald Triangle.
Another recent example, last summer, our Subcommittee on Cultivation met and discussed labeling requirements for the Cannabis Appalachians of Origin program. An appellation, it's essentially a legal claim of regional distinction. It's a standard that recognizes a specific geographic region and features of that region that influence the production standards and what makes the final product special. Appellations in other types of products, for example, are champagne, Bordeaux wine, Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese, coffee, and even tequila. So it's exciting to be setting that up for the cannabis industry as well. DCC shares responsibility for the Appalachians of Origin program with the California Department of Food and Agriculture, or CDFA. CDFA is currently in the process of developing regulations that describe how cannabis businesses can request that CDFA establish an Appalachian of Origin. DCC is the oversight authority for packaging and labeling of cannabis and cannabis products. And so DCC will be establishing regulations on how appellations can be used in the context of packaging and labeling. And so input that we received from the Cannabis Advisory Committee is truly vital in ensuring that these dual regulatory roles capture everything appropriately.
Campion said the DCC values the input of cannabis industry insiders, including cultivators, who can speak to the real-world application of DCC regulations. As such, Campion said the DCC seeks cultivators of all canopy sizes, technique, and region.
So the more robust expertise we can get in that area, the better.
Though the application window is ending soon, interested individuals are encouraged to apply, even if they miss the application window.
So our current recruitment push is through the end of this month, so we have a few more days. However, we do accept applications on a rolling basis. DCC staff are going to be reviewing the applications, making sure we're maximizing the breadth of knowledge in this advisory body to ensure it reflects the diversity of California and the cannabis market. And any applications that we do receive after July 31st are going to be kept on file and considered for future openings, because life happens and sometimes we have members who need to bow out from the commitment. We're also going to be doing rolling membership, so rather than having all of the membership terms end at the same time, we will be rotating members in as needed. So there will be many opportunities in the future. We just happen to have a lot right now.
For more information or to apply, visit cannabis.ca.gov and search CAC. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Reporting from the K-Mud Studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.